What I said last night just rocked a lot of people right down to their very bones. Sorry about that. That's just the way it goes sometimes. I'm definitely a risk taker, and I've done this before in my life. Many of you must remember, or should remember, from my book or things I've said on the radio, that I lived on the island of Okinawa, very similar climate, for 10 years. So this is not exactly alien to me. In addition, I've made decisions like this in my life before. It's just one of those things, and that's just me. Always expect the unexpected from me. I expect the unexpected from me. Now, a lot of people have asked about my kitty cats, and believe me, it's a gigantic issue. What I'm going to do is I'm going to attempt to take Yeti and Abby Dose with me to the Philippines. Now, there is all kinds of opinions about quarantines, whether they have them or not. Some say 30 days. Others say nada. Now, I have all the up-to-date shot records and everything, but we'll see. So I'll try and take Yeti and Abby Dose. In the case of Shadow, she is, of course, with my now brother-in-law, Dusty and Comet. I've got to find new homes for Dusty and Comet. Comet, of course, is a wild one, but he's now gentle as a lamb, although shy. Dusty is the most beautiful cat in the whole world. So I've got to find homes for those two, and then two I shall take to the other side of the world. Let's briefly look at world news, what there is of it. Not good news from Iraq, never is. Efforts to form a unity government suffered a big setback Sunday when Iraqi leaders postponed a parliament session after failing to agree on a prime minister. Bombs, of course, targeted Shiites near a mosque and as well on a bus as attacks nationwide killed 35 people. Four more Marines dead in fighting west of Baghdad, bringing the U.S. death toll for this month to 47 compared to 31 for all of March. Iran's former president accused the United States Sunday of waging a psychological war against Tehran, said that American strikes against Islamic republics would not be in Washington's best interests. Former Iranian President Rafsanjani, who heads the Expediency Council, I like that name, the Expediency Council, a very powerful body that mediates between Iran's parliament and clerical hierarchy, and yes, that would be quite powerful. They said that Western nations' attempts to block Iran's nuclear program were, in quotes, unjust. An announcement that police made an arrest in the disappearance of teenager Natalie Holloway, this is a big one, left many islanders wondering Sunday who exactly the suspect is now, and whether the arrest marked a real actual breakthrough in the almost year-old case. Rubian authorities would only say late Saturday that the person arrested is 19 years of age and has the initials GVC. In Aruba, when an arrest is announced, officials usually release only a suspect's initials. That's interesting. I'm a little hoarse. I may be getting a cold. I've had two 14-hour plane flights recently. Looking forward to more. And so I may be getting a cold. I'm a little hoarse because I've been talking on the phone all day long, as you might suspect after what I announced last night. In Oklahoma, the man accused of killing a 10-year-old neighbor girl for an elaborate plan, he had some elaborate plan to eat human flesh. He joked about cannibalism, apparently, on his online diary, discussing the effects of not taking his anti-depression medication and mentioned, quote, dangerously weird, end quote, fantasies. All he wanted in life, said Kevin Ray Underwood in his blog, was to be able to live like a normal person. Well, Kevin, most of us don't fantasize about eating human flesh. Two registered sex offenders fatally shot in their central Maine home early Sunday, and a Canadian man sought in connection with the slayings apparently shot himself. Kyle MacDonald has a red paper clip and a dream. Could he use the community power of the Internet to barter that paper clip for something better? A trade for a trade for a trade, for, you know, and so on and so forth until Finally, he would end up with a house. So you start with a paperclip, you end up with a house, and so on. Anyway, after a cross-continental trading trek involving a fish-shaped pen, a town named Yank, and the web's astonishing ability to bestow celebrity, apparently McDonald is getting closer. He's now up to 1 year's free rent on a house in Phoenix. Isn't the web wonderful? We'll be right back. In the next hour, Major Ed Dames, the world's foremost remote viewing teacher, and indeed a remote viewer himself. I want to get a lot of calls in this hour, unscreened, letter-rip kind of calls, so we'll get to that in a moment. I want to make note of this. Dear Art, it's an email. You need to go back to the March 12th interview with Evelyn Paglini and listen to hour two. I just did the podcast. And it blew me away, the accuracies in her dire predictions. I'm amazed by the things that she was foreseeing. Well, they're already coming to fruition. She talked about floods in California, levees breaking, and the governor declaring states of emergency repeatedly. She was predicting civil unrest. We're certainly seeing that. She mentioned terrible tornadoes and storms already going on, huge hurricanes for the upcoming season. All I can say is, wow, she's amazing. Yes. I don't know how many people have been keeping track of Evelyn's predictions over the last several shows, but she's been spot on, as they say. I thought this an amazing story. You might have already heard it, but it's absolutely amazing. From the crests of the Cascades to the Puget Sound, where people in the Pacific Northwest can expect to experience changes driven by global warming. Well, it's not amazing. The next story is amazing. This one is just a sort of a warning, I guess, of what's going to happen. Expect more winter flooding, more summer water shortages, more destructive wildfires, more troubled salmon runs, on average shorter ski seasons. Not all bad, though. Maybe some of you will not have to chain up going over the pass, you know, so frequently. Won't be as cold on average in the winter. In many years, you'll be able to get away with starting your spring garden earlier. So there's an upside to global warming in the short run for some people, but I would have a big caution about these kinds of stories about how, you know, in some slightly cooler climates, it's going to get nicer. Well, maybe, but the overall change is not necessarily a good thing for the poles, where we have lots of snow presently and won't soon. This one is amazing. Missouri teen survives ride in tornado. Every time a late night freight train thunders past, Mr. Suter, that's his name, wakes up, remembers the vicious twister that pulled him from his home March 12th, then somehow, incredibly, landed him in a pasture about a quarter mile away. Suter's harrowing encounter had brought him sudden fame with national news media coverage. One tornado expert said he knew of no one who has traveled as far as Suter did in a tornado and lived to tell about it, save Dorothy. It's a pretty awkward record to have, he said. He doesn't really like any of the publicity at all. On the night of the tornado, he said, he was watching TV news in his boxer shorts. He heard a jet-like roar approaching the trailer. He shared with his grandmother and uncle his concern. He was trying to shut a window in the living room. His grandmother was in the kitchen. This tornado apparently struck. The window broke. Door got sucked out. I looked at my grandmother. The walls were like jello, the trailer rolling back and forth. I jumped between the coffee table and couch, and I remember the trailer tipping. His grandmother, Linda Kelly, said Suter had hollered at her in the trailer, and when she came into the kitchen, quote, I turned around to look at where he was, and that whole end of the trailer was simply gone. A large, heavy glass lamp struck Suter on the top of his head, knocked him unconscious. When he came to, he was in a grass pasture. Global positioning satellites used by the National Weather Service measured the distance at 1,307 feet from the trailer site. He said, when I woke up in the field, I didn't know I was how long had I been lying there. Probably thought he was dead. He ran, finally, in bare feet on a gravel road to the residence of a neighbor, reported what had happened, said the storm blew him out into the field, didn't know if his grandma and uncle were alive at the time. The neighbor called 911. Ambulances responded. He apparently suffered a cut on his head that required 5 staples. His feet were badly bruised from running on the gravel, and he still limps from the pain. But his doctor said his lack of serious injuries indeed rule out any other possibility other than his account. In other words, he was picked up by this tornado and then apparently somewhat gently deposited on the ground a quarter of a mile away. So save the fictional Dorothy, I think that would certainly be the record. And he doesn't really want it. I can understand that. But can you imagine being picked up by a tornado and then more or less gently deposited on the ground? That's absolutely amazing. As are many things in life. You know, that was the one thing that the coroner impressed upon me after my late wife, Ramona, died. He said, life is short. He really, really impressed that upon me. And actually had a little list that he had made up. And life is very short, ladies and gentlemen. So if my example of pulling up stakes and turning my life upside down does anything at all, I hope it will encourage some of you who are tempted to crawl under a rock or sort of stop living to not do that and instead move forward and create a new chapter in your life, as I have done. And I've done this many times in my life. I'm a risk taker. You only live once, and as the coroner said, life is really short. So I hope some of you who are out there sort of on the cusp of a decision, you know, a life-altering decision, yes, you have to think it over well and thoroughly and be sure of what you're doing, which, by the way, I am completely sure. But don't be afraid of change. Too many people are afraid to simply, I don't know, turn around the direction of their life, whatever direction it's in, and completely do something else. First time caller line, I think you're on the air. Hello.
Well, hi, Art.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm just fine.
That's great. My name is Ray. I'm a truck driver from East Texas here.
I had a feeling you might be in a truck.
Yes, sir. Just wanted to congratulate you and everything, let you know that I, too, am engaged to a beautiful Filipino lady from Cagayan de Oro.
I can never say it right. It's Cagayan de Oro City. The Spanish actually added the de Oro part.
Right.
But I've never been able to quite pronounce it, correctly. Maybe you've got it right.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, that's just how I've heard it pronounced before, you know, so I'm just, that's the way I'm doing it.
Well, that's a city of about 500,000 people. My bride comes from an area, oh, I don't know, about 3 hours or so from Cagayan de Oro City. Way the heck out there. By the way, I've got another webcam shot. I know you probably can't get it in the truck, but I put it up tonight, with a waterfall in the background. That's one I think you haven't seen yet, folks, if you want to take a look, Art's webcam.
Okay.
So.
That'll be great.
Can you stop and see stuff in the truck?
No.
Well, let me turn you on. You can get a little cell phone that'll plug into a laptop computer, and you could have cell phone all the way across country. You could have a data all the way across the country now.
Well, I'll be. I didn't know that.
Yes, sir. You can do it.
Well, I spent a couple weeks over there in the Philippines, about this same time last year, and I'll tell you, the hardest thing I ever done in my life was get back on the plane, you know, to come back over here.
Oh, I hear you.
So I'm very excited for you, and I know how you feel.
Thank you very, very much. And take care, sir. Yeah, it's a completely, trying to explain the culture there, for example, with respect to the age difference, is very, very, very difficult. But, let's see, how can I put this in a way that some Americans who have not traveled outside the U.S. might be able to understand? It's almost like going, particularly for this audience, it's almost like going into another dimension. When you step off an airplane on the other side of the world, in the Orient, whether it's Japan or where I used to live, Okinawa, or the Philippines or Vietnam or anywhere in Asia, Particularly in Asia. If you go to Europe, it's kind of one step away from the U.S., and there's much you'll recognize. When you go to Asia, it's a completely new world. You might as well be going into another universe. And the moment you come off the plane, all of the sights, all of the sounds, the very air itself, the way the air smells, and I don't mean that in any negative sense, it's all different. Everything is completely different. It's just like walking into another universe. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
How you doing?
Fine. I'm in L.A. God, I saw your pictures last night. You look like a happy guy.
Well, that's because I am.
Yeah, well, you really made a big transition there. You went from hell to fantasy to you're living in paradise right now. At least you will be soon.
Well, isn't it strange what life has in store for people?
Yeah, a lot of people can learn a lot from what you've done. Most people, if you look at statistics, most people who've been in the situation you have, just they sit and everything around them reminds them of their past, and they just, you know, after a few years, their health dwindles, and then they die. And you really are inspiring to a lot of people out there. You've actually done what it takes to get away from negativity and put yourself in a positive light.
Let me tell you, my friend, you've exactly nailed it. Sitting around alone in the house with everything that reminds you of what was, and then dwelling on what was, without a future, is sort of, I don't know, opting for death, opting for the negative. And what I'm doing instead is turning everything upside down and starting a new life. I've done it before, and so I'm not surprised at myself, that is to say, that I'm doing it again. So you're dead on, spot on.
Yeah, well, I wrote a little essay in college, you know, about the exact same situation that you're in. A lot of people actually, not only in their personal lives and relationships, most people make their jobs their life, and once they retire, they die. Because you have to make your job your hobby. And once you retire, you could take your hobby, your job into, you know, being a hobby, and you could continue. A lot of people just end their lives with, they get attached to their environment, and, you know, they just dwindle away. And it's amazing how you made the transition, actually, are a survivor in a way, you know. You really, you put yourself in a wonderful situation, and, you're married to an angel. She looks like the sweetest person in the world.
She is. She is, sir. She is exactly as she looks.
Oh, God.
Ramona was with me all the way on this, trust me. In fact, her guiding hand was here all the way, more than you can imagine.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about, God, you're probably like, you're thinking about, you know, communicating with her on your decisions, through your mind, basically. You know, when you lose somebody you're close to, I've had a girlfriend that passed, when you think in your mind what they would think of what you're doing, the things that you're doing.
Yeah, many people also wrote to me, you know, I got about 5 million emails, I've been trying to go through them, that many times when men lose their wives, come out of very, very good marriages, and man, mine was the best, they tend to remarry very quickly. And I guess that's because your experience with marriage was very, very, very good. And, of course, the separation from it is gigantic. I mean, it's just monstrous. So there's a tendency for men who lose their wives like that to remarry fairly quickly. So I guess I'm in the majority there.
It's like almost losing a twin when you're that close, because from what I hear, you guys were with each other all the time. You never separated.
Never, sir. Never for a day. So trust me when I tell you, and I asked a million times, I think I said it last night, I told Ramona a million times, kick me in the ass if I'm doing the wrong thing here. No kicks ever came. Quite to the contrary. Everything went boom, 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 boom. And then when I actually went there, it was better than I could have ever hoped for.
Oh, God. It's almost like surreal, I'm sure, your life. You're in a completely different environment.
It is.
The air, the food, the people. It's almost like you died and went to heaven almost.
It's like another dimension. And, you know, to again put the capper on this one, you're really right. It's a choice of life. It's choosing life instead of a road that's eventually just going to lead to a slow erosion. It's just one of those choices. And that's why I said to people who are on the cusp of a life-altering decision out there, yes, think it over carefully, but don't be afraid to change and make your life better suddenly, if that's what you want to do. You have a good night, sir, and thank you. It's interesting. A lot of people have written and said, well, how can you get rid of all that stuff? It's easy. It's just stuff, you know? Stuff doesn't mean that much. And if you don't know that now, then you will as you get older. And you certainly will if you suffer a great big loss. It's just stuff, albeit real nice stuff. I've got a lot of really nice stuff, and some of it is certainly for sale. Now, I'm giving a very good friend of mine, Paul, here in town, a power of attorney, and he will sell some of this stuff. But that's all it is, stuff. And as I mentioned last night, if you're interested in stuff, you can give, actually, you can send Paul a fax. So what I'm doing is giving out Paul's fax number for that purpose and that purpose only, which is area code 775-582-1310. Let me repeat, area code 775-582-1310. One last time, assuming you might have run for a pen. It's a fax number, and Paul will be handling all this for me. Area code 775-582-1310. With regard to the properties, again, it's just, yes, it's 5 beautiful acres here with the biggest amateur radio antenna ever built. If a ham were to buy this place, I might be tempted to sell it. Otherwise, I'm not in a position where I need to at all, so I may well hang on to it. But, you know, if a ham operator came along, this location should not remain idle. This antenna is killer class. Not to mention the 100-foot tower and all the rest of it. So, and, you know, 2 houses, a main house and a guest house, each equally large. So, and racquetball courts, indoor racquetball courts and solar power, and oh my God, there's so much at these residences. If a good ham came along, I'd probably sell it to him and give him a good buy just because it's a ham radio operator. But otherwise, I'll hold on to the properties, so no big deal either way. All right, back to the lines. First time caller line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
All right, I've been listening to you since 1995.
Long time.
And I've got all your books, and we'll make a long story short. July 4th, 1990, I spent 6 weeks in the Philippines and almost 24 hours a day with my Chinese-born Filipina.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
100%. It'll be 16 years we've been married coming up this July 4th.
Well, would you like to try and explain to the audience something that is very difficult for me? There is such a large difference in our cultures and the way a Filipina thinks than we think. Can you explain the difference in culture?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's hear it.
First of all, we were not allowed to be alone unchaperoned at any case until after we said, I do.
Actually, I think it's I will is a tradition in the Philippines. Yeah. Anyway, yes, so there's that. It's very strict, and, of course, the country's mostly Catholic, as I said last night. In our country, we separate religion from government, and in the Philippines, religion essentially runs government.
It sure does.
Yeah.
And I finally, a few days before I was ready to leave, I went over and asked my father-in-law, whose primary language is Chinese, and I asked my wife to interpret, and then her big brother jumped in and interpreted, mm-hmm. and I asked for his daughter's hand in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And this turned out to be my best friend. He's the one that introduced us, because he had married her sister a year and a half before.
I see.
And when I saw the videotape of their wedding and I saw this woman who was just so angelic and beautiful and had a heart as big as the moon and loved me more than 1,000 women could love me, I said, this is the woman for me. I just hope she'll take me.
Well, I'm glad she did, sir, and I'm happy for you. It is, and I guess we didn't get into it enough, but there is a just a gigantic, it's as though you're going, the only way I can think to put it is, it's like you're going into another dimension, and I just don't mean the senses now, but in terms of the cultural differences, they're very drastic. Filipinos are very close family-wise. Family is everything. When you marry a Filipina, you really marry the family. I do a little reading. There's really no way in short moments or even longer moments to explain it all. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art. How you doing? I want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
And I have a few questions, and I'm disappointed you're getting rid of those cats. I'd keep them.
Well, I'm not, sir.
I
can't take five cats to the Philippines.
Can you take three?
You know, I'm going to take two. I'm going to take a Yeti and Abydos.
Yep.
Of course, Shadow's already gone with my new brother-in-law. And as for the other two, Comet is going to be rough to find a home for. Yeah. So it's somebody, you know, he's wild. I mean, there's a limit. I'm going to a condo kind of situation.
Oh, you're not going to? I thought you were going to get a piece of property over there. We get all that solar power, because I said he's so used to living in the country. What's he going to do?
May do that eventually, but I'm going to begin with a condo for a lot of practical reasons. One having to do with communication, because I want to keep doing this radio program. So I'm in a communication center in the Manila area.
Okay, can you tell us what the personalities are like of the people, all the years of Melda Marcos and all those? If there's a disagreement, there's a disagreement.
Okay. I can try. This is what I've been trying to do, is impart to you the cultural differences, and it's not easy. You can do some reading on the net and sort of catch up on it, but it's very drastically different. They still have bridges. I went sailing under the Marcos Bridge, for example. And while he was a dictator, many people in the Philippines still feel that Marcos was an okay guy. And not everything he did was bad. He created a great deal of infrastructure. For those of you who are cell phone fanatics, they're actually ahead of us over there. They've got G3 deployed all over the country. Even in the most remote province you could go to, way out in the middle of nowhere, you've got G3 technology. And I guess they've done that because they sort of waited and deployed all their technology a little later than we did. We put a lot of copper up. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing? And congratulations.
Thank you.
Actually, I was on the phone to the Philippines when you announced.
You're kidding.
No. I have a lady over there. She's in, and I'm going to butcher this, okay? Bataan City.
Okay.
You think you know? Okay, it's round the vowel.
In the Davao area, okay. I that's one area that I have not yet been to, but I hear it's beautiful.
Well, it's on the other side of the island, up towards Manila.
Right.
But I was on the phone to her, and I heard, you know, I would just...
No, wait. I think okay. Davao is actually south, isn't it?
It's
even
south.
Further south.
Yeah.
Than Mindanao.
Yeah.
My, you know, geographic knowledge of the area is somewhat limited, but I think Davao was the most southern of the major islands.
Yes, it is.
Philippines is made up of over 7,000 islands.
7,100, yes.
There you go.
But I was on the phone to her, and I heard you announce that you went to the Philippines, and I was in the middle of speaking to her, and I just stopped. And she's like, well, what's wrong? And I said, you got to listen to this. So I put the phone up to the radio, and as you was announcing it, she's like, oh, that's great. That's lovely. You got to call him and tell him congratulations. And I'm like, well, he runs a major radio program. You can't just call him up, you know.
Oh, well, you just did.
Well, that's true. I told her that I was, by force of will, I was going to get a hold of you today.
By force of will, you have done so.
Okay. But she says congratulations, too.
Thank you.
And hopefully in December, I'm going to be following in your footsteps.
Really? Well, maybe we'll cross paths. Who knows?
I hope so. But I just wanted to wish you congratulations, and I hope everything works out good for you.
Good luck to you, my friend. Take care, and thank you very much for the call. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Hey there.
Hey, listen, you're going to miss the dry heat, though. You got a little humidity going back there.
A little?
My only connection to the Philippines was a leading petty officer in the Navy, D.K. Juan Quilon, what a sweetheart. He took me over to his family and fed me and stuff, and he protected me from the executive officer. God bless him.
I see.
But, you know, without movement, there's death, and you're moving on. And if I may wax poetic before I make my little statement here, you know, the struggle between the flesh and the spirit is really non-existent. If you think of the flesh needs the spirit in order to move, and the spirit needs the flesh in order to understand and learn to grow here on the planet.
I guess that's fair.
Yeah, but listen, I wanted to reiterate, I made a prediction on your show on New Year's Eve about losing communication temporarily with satellites disappearing. It's going to happen, I think, between May 15th and May 17th, maybe even May 16th.
And you think this will be due to what? Some sort of solar activity?
Solar activities, and I think Dr. McCanny talked about some comet fragments coming back. You know, coming through here, but also we got a big mess up there. I think pretty soon we're going to have to organize our, you know, putting up our satellites and stuff, because we might just have some basic collisions. You
well,
know,
you're
like
right. You're right about that. It is trash alley up there.
Yeah,
and it's not the kind of deal where you can get a bunch of inmates out picking up space junk.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's going to come back, and we might have a little more appreciation for our communication, maybe a few hours and stuff, and the landlines will pick up, but then, you know, hopefully it'll be back up for when you do your show from the Philippines, you know?
I sure hope so, sir. Thank you. We're not going to be necessarily dependent on satellite, although that might be one way we'll go. It looks like it'll be ISDN from the Manila area back to Los Angeles, and then, I mean, contemplating how all of this happens, the magic of radio anyway, is just amazing to me. Always has been. It has never worn off. Radio is simply magical. The voice, the theater of the mind, the fact that it's through the air, the magic of that has never, ever changed for me since the first moment I realized what radio was. And I mean, more than just the technical aspect of it, but the fact that a voice travels through the air, through the night, to you from any side or any place. Rush is famous, I think, for saying it doesn't matter where I am. And he's certainly right about that. It absolutely doesn't. I simply am taking it out to the limit of that statement. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Yes, just wanted to congratulate you on going to the Philippines.
Thank you.
I was there. My fiance lives there now, and we're just almost getting her paperwork done. Everything was cleared in the States, so we should be getting her over here in about 3 months.
Well, you see, so, I chose to go the other way. My bride just doesn't care about coming here, so and I care about going there, so it's worked out quite well, thank you.
Yeah, I really admire what you're doing. That's it's a really cool place. There's no place like the Philippines anywhere, you know.
It's absolutely beautiful.
And it really is.
That's why I suggested that everybody, thank you very much, take a, and congrats, take a look at the webcam shot I've got up tonight. It's like that all over. It's the most amazing place you've ever seen. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going fine. Turn your radio off, please.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. I surprise people.
My name is Chris. I'm calling from Lakewood, Washington.
Yes, sir.
And I just wanted to share a story about my animal that I had for about 9 years.
Right.
It was a dog. It was my very first animal. I got it when I was 9 years old. I'm 19 right now. I've been listening to your show for about a year now. I mean, I've been working as a security guard for almost a year. And I stumbled upon it one night when I was doing my rounds. I guess one of the security guards before me had left your station on, so pretty good. I was pretty lucky, and you keep me going through the night. So
yeah, it really does make time fly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Well, anyway, I had my dog for about 9 years. It's my very first pet. Loved it to death, and I just wanted to say the way he died. He died about 8 months ago, and it was on a Sunday. We were going to church, and he'd been acting a little funny when we left. And I always pet my dog, and I say goodbye to it every time I leave. And when we came back, it was about 12 o'clock. He was sitting on our porch in the front of the door, and he was looking at me, so I walked up to it, and it was whimpering, so I asked it what was wrong, and it put its hand out. You know how dogs put their hands out to shake your hand?
Of course.
And I said what was wrong, and he just fell over.
Oh.
And I remember that because in my mind, I think that he waited for me to come home before he let go.
Clearly. Yeah, I'll tell you, our pets, it's the toughest part of this whole thing. Everything else is just stuff, as I said a little earlier. It's just stuff. But my cats have been part of my life as children. So I'm trying to do the right thing. And in the case of my wild guy, Comet, he would not stand up. It looks like there may be a 30-day quarantine. He wouldn't stand up to that. He just wouldn't. It would be so wrong to try and take him. And Dusty, you know, I think I'm at a kind of a limit. I'm going to take my two of my cats. That would be about the best I can do in the kind of setting I'm going to be in. But Yeti and Abydos have no idea what's coming up for them. Perhaps quarantine, perhaps not. As I said, research on the web shows about half the time there is no quarantine. The other half of the time it looks like there is quarantine, and I have their shot records all set and ready to go. We'll see. That's about in the condo kind of environment I'm going to be in. That's about the most I can manage is two. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to wish you the best on this Easter and that you know that your karma has changed for the best for you personally, that you're leaving the United States in a very good format for your future, and that love and harmony and the spirit are with you right now and have taken you out of the depths and darkness of despair and the valley of the shadows. And I'm happy, happy for you.
Yeah, that's exactly how it feels.
Well, I had a story. I know it's almost the end of the hour, so I'll make it as fast as I can. November of this year, last year, I'd been speaking with a friend about a situation that happened May 9th of 2004. His wife had died. I'd known them for 25 years, and we had practiced metaphysics and occult magic in the white arena together for many years. And by May 9th, 2005, on the evening of that night, at about midnight, I'd been meditating for 3 hours, and his wife had told me something very strange. She appeared in audio voice like your couple last night who was speaking on the terms of recording.
Yes.
Audios.
EVP.
Of the dead.
Yes.
And the thing is, right before midnight, his wife told me, tell Douglas to stay with Shelley, who had just met his new girlfriend that he just met 2 weeks before. And I didn't have anything to know about her knowledge about who she was or what she had come to be in his life for, except his wife, Kathy, told me to tell him. And I called him up directly, immediately, right at midnight, and I said, Doug, you wouldn't believe what just happened. And I told him, and he said, you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. Sit down. And he said, she died exactly at this time year ago.
Really?
On May 9th. And this is a validation of what is that spirit essence that still is qualifyingly living in the concrete, but in the next definitive dimensional level.
I totally believe it.
And I think your wife in the past knows it, too. Right now, she's watching, and she's very happy in a spiritual sense.
I'm very well aware of that, sir. Easily the most hated and loved guest that I ever have on this program. And I mean it, hated and loved. He's a decorated military intelligence officer, an original member of the now famous, or is it infamous, U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. I have read his entire military record. Beginning to end, it's a long one, and everything in there is true. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, which is a private consulting group, the technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero. I love that movie, by the way. It was a Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner production. Ed actually coached Sir Ben Kingsley, had a little part himself in the movie, and played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor as well. Now, it was really a good movie. I've got to say, of this movie, that it was, you know, I watched it with a judgmental eye, I would say. And I really, at the end, I thought that was excellent. So if you get a chance, see it, Suspect Zero. In a moment, the man who, well, to say it again, is the most loved and hated, that's quite a title to have, guest that I ever have on the radio, Major Ed Dames, coming right up. It is a curious thing. It really is. The people who dislike Ed Dames continually mention his misses, or what they consider to be his misses. The people who dislike him sort of concentrate only on that and never on what he hit. And he had quite a few hits over the years, and it's been a lot of years now that Ed's been on the show. He's had a lot of hits. And then there's that other timeline thing. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is. First of all, Ed, welcome to the back to the program.
Happy Easter, Art. I'm sure it's happy for you.
Thank you. It is indeed a happy Easter for me. I am so in love, Ed. Anyway, I guess we share something somewhat in common. You're marrying a woman from the Ukraine, is that correct?
From Ukraine, yes. And in fact, I'm moving to, as I mentioned on a couple of shows ago, I'm moving to Ukraine to be with her. She doesn't want to come to the States, and I can understand.
Nor does my bride. Isn't that, it's rather interesting and statistically unusual.
Both the Philippines and Ukraine, and as well as many other countries, that family is so important, family and friends.
That's correct.
And it can be cold here. The standard of living by our standards is high, but it's cold. It can be emotionally cold.
Well, a lot of gals, all around the world, Ed, form their opinion of the United States based on our movies and our television. And, you know, we have so much media that comes from the U.S. We're king of the world in that category.
I agree.
And that's how they form their opinion of what all of America is like, by watching movies. And so, of course, in many cases, it's simply not accurate.
No. But they do form their opinion on what they see. And they do. In Ukraine, unfortunately, now, with the advent of television, about 10 or 15 years ago, TV became very popular, and there's a lot. Instead of reading books, they're now plopped in front of the TV. Soon that will be the Internet, of course.
So you fluently speak Chinese, and you're going to have to go learn Russian.
I'm enjoying learning Russian. I only speak a little now, but I'm learning fast.
Well, I guess you're a fast learner if you're fluent in Chinese. Anyway, it's certainly good to have you back. When are you going to the Ukraine?
I'll go to Ukraine hopefully next month for a short period of time, and then a longer time in July. I'm aiming toward a late autumn or winter marriage.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. And same to you.
Thank you. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show here that those who dislike you, and there are many, you have a lot of fans, Ed. I mean, you really, really have a lot of fans. And even a lot of the people that hate you wouldn't miss a word you say. They wouldn't miss a word you say. They point out what they consider to be your failures. Do you have any failures you would like to document and say, yeah, I screwed up absolutely on that one?
Oh, yes. I'll talk about one big one tonight. In fact, I did an interview for the May issue of After Dark, and I almost talked about my failure. I almost said it, but that everything changed last week. In terms of those failures, there won't be any more failures after last week.
Why?
A tremendous breakthrough, one that I'm ecstatic about. This search problem that we've had to deal with, that I've had to deal with for the past 22 years, that has been an abysmal failure, particularly with what MIA, the Matrix Intelligence Agency, calls Project Operation Goldeneye, search for children and child murderers.
Yes.
A terrible failures. We've had very, very few successes on that, and that's my favorite project, of course, as you know. But last week, I flew into Ann Arbor and sat down with my partner Brent Miller to try to really work the search problem over and over again. We had a good method that we developed called a geofix method, but it just became unwieldy. We wanted something that was much more streamlined and effective. So we sat down for a week. and we came up with a breakthrough that is profound. It's it is totally profound. We can now locate a target, any target, person, place, thing, a treasure, a fugitive, a missing child, to GPS precision every single time. We field tested this breakthrough. Brent Miller had someone hide a cigarette case within 40 miles of within a 40 square mile area of Las Vegas, Nevada, and he was able by himself, without my backup or anybody else on the team's backup, to walk up to that cigarette to the rock under that the cigarette case was hidden at and find it. Just
dare I ask how?
We are able to. We looked at what was working in terms of the search problem. What we didn't have in the military unit. I mean, this would have been a dream in the military unit days 25 years ago to have something like this, and we didn't. It took all this time to develop it. We use a terrain index reference system that's still proprietary, but we have to teach our students, of course, how to find things. And it's technical in nature, but the breakthrough is very, very elegant and simple. And it takes us, an individual, probably about a professional, 2 days minimally to precisely, within a few meters, locate a target. But without understanding remote viewing and how it works, it would be difficult to explain to you how we actually do it. We run through a series of about 60 to 80 remote viewing sessions that last not your regular 45-minute to 2-hour sessions, but perhaps 15 minutes. And we compile the information, and we use some mathematics techniques, and out from that falls pinpoint locations. And we used it this week to actually locate a child's...
Well, it's wonderful to hear that. I guess remote viewing, really, would you call it a science?
Well, I wouldn't now. In fact, right now, with this technique, with this geofix technique, we can outperform any technology-based system. Outperform it every time. We can tell you where a threat submarine is parked, where Osama bin Laden is. I mean, I'm like a kid in the candy store. What do you go after? Noah's Ark, Osama bin Laden, Atlantis?
Well, that's a serious, very, very serious improvement if you've really done this. I would think the military would be most immediately interested in such an increase in capability. I mean, it is an emerging and changing... We've not heard the last word on remote viewing, obviously. It's morphing, right?
Oh, obviously the CIA is very, very interested in this in terms of strategic intelligence, and I'll tell you what I'm interested in a moment. But as one might imagine, in terms of strategic intelligence collection, the highest priority for this breakthrough is nuclear terrorism. And I think it's an interesting coincidence that this particular breakthrough probably came perhaps not a minute too late. In this context, my team is not only a national asset in terms of, let's say, nuclear emergency search team support, but we're an international asset as well. And that's, after 22 years, this discovery, 22 years in the field, this discovery is beyond simply meeting the promise of RV, which would have been what I would have been happy with, to be able to find the missing child each time, for instance. But it's really going to silence the skeptics. And historically speaking, it's profound not only in terms of intelligence collection, but also in terms of, let's say, human potential.
Well, and if you so much as identify the exact whereabouts very publicly of somebody very publicly missing, you could immediately add 10 tons of credibility, and you'd have people rapping at your door. No question.
It's going to come fast. It's going to come. We after the field test, we immediately applied it operationally. My primary role is still that of an educator. I teach people to do this, but I'm still an intelligence officer, and I use remote viewing exclusively for the information that I collect and that my team collects. But we've got this precision guidance system now, and we took it into the field very recently on a missing child case. Now, I have sent Lex Lonewood and you overhead photography. I do not want to talk about this case, nor do I want to talk about what's on that film, but you'll see at the crosshairs in one of the overhead photos that I sent you, specifically right there is a child's body, and the murderer is on that particular property. But what we have to do in because the FBI and law enforcement agencies are so overworked. And these kids, for instance, when we're dealing with kids, they fall off the radar screen really quickly. And we'll have more to say about that tonight. But we have to do the entire. We found after all of our failures, what we went back and looked at what we were doing right and wrong, and we realized we have to do everything ourselves. Not only do the field work, but we have to investigate a culprit, and that means.
Well, that's a lot of resources for one thing.
Well, once you streamline the process, we know exactly what to do. For instance. On this current case, a child murder. Not only do we have to be on the ground and surveil a location and perhaps a person, a murderer, abductor, murderer, kidnapper in this case, but we've got to actually do more than that. And sometimes we have to interact with the murderer to get to gain intelligence. We have to actually,
you mean virtually get in the murderer's mind?
No.
No.
We have to be on the ground and actually interact. So in addition to, for instance, I've got to publicly express my gratitude to David Rosetta for a recent operation, one of my team members. You can see his picture on a past webpage our show. He actually had a hidden camera and video, and he actually interacted with the murderer and got close enough, put himself in harm's way, so that we could get the essential evidence we need. And he came up with some really critical data, too. He was near the murderer and about the murderer, stuff that we need to put together a portfolio, to put together a case to present to FBI and other law enforcement cognizant agencies, to convince them to conduct a search. Otherwise, DA won't grant search warrants and those kinds of things. So we've got to actually put together an entire case. And that means intelligence collection, the whole bit. We can't depend on law enforcement to do this. I think one of my goals has always been to become an operating arm of America's Most Wanted. And now we can realize that. So I'm just ecstatic over this breakthrough.
Well, it's going to take nailing one, as I said, to prove what you're saying.
Absolutely.
You're confident you can do that?
Oh, I am beyond confident. Like I said, I'm ecstatic. This thing is so sweet. It's a wonderful discovery.
Well, you should, whatever it is, you should make it very public. I mean, you've got to nail something before the public's eyes. It's not enough to send Lex something and myself something.
Oh, we're painfully aware of that. One of the things we're going to do is we're going to do that quickly, very, very quickly. We have some unfinished business. I have an Edmonton serial killer that we have to put out of commission. And my own most wanted man, who's also Russia's most wanted man, is Shamil Basayev. He's the engineer of the Beslan massacre. I need to help the FSB, Russia's security service, to neutralize him. Those are personal projects. Some of the projects I'll talk about tonight, you'll see results on very quickly.
All right. Let's talk about them.
Okay, you were mentioning what I consider my failures. The missing children cases were my biggest failures because we could always get close to a missing child, usually a child's body, but never close enough to be digging in the right spot. We could identify the location of the child's murderer, but we couldn't get enough evidence to take the murderer off the street or to have, let's say, law enforcement conduct a search. There wasn't enough for to convince law enforcement to give them a cause for search. But because of the pinpoint accuracy of this breakthrough now, we don't have to waste resources squirreling around on reconnaissance, many reconnaissance trips and things like that. We can go right to the target. And the missing child case this week, I think maybe the first one that comes to light, but possibly not. We're going to help with the Natalie Holloway investigation, and that's a good case in point. I took that project on.
What can you tell us about her?
I took the project on. I'm going to tell you something about her. I took the project on only because my heart went out to Dave Holloway, her father, after I read an excerpt from his book on the web. I couldn't help but put myself in this place.
Okay.
Usually, I only go after younger children because they're innocent. They're totally innocent, and evil's got them. And we feel drawn to those cases more than others. But it was just pretty heartrending to read that to read that.
Well, if you want to stick your neck out on Holloway, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to.
Go.
Witness the turtle. It only makes progress by sticking its neck out.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I'm a risk taker too, as you know.
Okay, so extend.
Okay, so we a typical project like that, I divide my team up into two tasks. So three or four of the team members, we go to work remote viewing the target's location and
right.
disposition. In
right.
this case, we're looking at Natalie Holloway. Is she dead or alive, and where is she? Those
okay.
kinds of things. The other half of my team goes to work with this new geofix technique to pinpoint her location.
Exactly where, yes.
Yeah. So her disposition, and many of my students in my last workshop in Las Vegas, and I have another workshop next month scheduled too, the students work this as a practicum. And the students in my remote viewing forum, my teaching forum on the web, also work these kinds of things. So they work in real-world problems. What I can tell you is that we did not investigate her death, the circumstances surrounding her death, only her disposition presently. She has been stuffed, her body has been stuffed into a lobster cage, a weighted lobster cage, and sunk immediately off the coast of Aruba. Now, that's her disposition. But those findings are really irrelevant to the authorities. That's just our word against anybody else's except for one thing.
And that
now
is...
with this technique, this precise technique, the technique is independent of topography or terrain. We open water, tundra, you name it, desert. We can pinpoint an ancient city as well as a body in the water.
Do you believe her body will be located in the manner, you know, in the manner that you just suggested it'll be found?
I'm going to put an X in the next week. I'm going to put an X exactly on a map exactly over where the body is.
That's exactly what you need to do. Once again, Major Ed Dames. Welcome back, Ed.
Thank you.
Okay, so you've got it to the point where you actually, truly this time, and there was, you sort of made the same declaration not long ago that you had, you know, actually nailed down a way for the exact where of things.
You get it down to within 10 miles, and then the system started to get, it became unwieldy, and there were mistakes that we were making in the process as well. But we fixed that. We fixed that in no uncertain terms.
All right. Well, this will also extend then, apparently, to some gold. Tell me about this.
It's my team, as a reward for my team, they asked to go after a gold treasure. We found, using remote viewing, a strong box that is sitting around in the Sierra foothills, and that is the gold target that I had talked about on your show. Now, in order to complete that promise to you, it looks like I'm going to have to fly to the Philippines to put that gold in your hand for a photo op. No, really, I mean, I can't. That was a promise. I've got to keep it.
Well, good for you. Will that be from the States or will that be from Ukraine?
God only knows. From Ukraine, I think it's equidistant. But
yeah.
Either way, through China, you know, maybe through China because I speak the language.
Yes. All right, so I can look forward to your eager little... Well, actually, to get into the building I'm in, you've got to have some ID. You've got plenty of that. So I'll hear and get a call saying, there's this man down here who's got gold for you, sir.
Yes,
that's
I'll
assuming
you
make it to my door alive.
I'll give you a heads up. I had a group of international lawyers that I did a contract for once, and they called themselves the SHIT Group, the Search for Hidden International Treasure. That was, no, I'm serious about this.
Great acronym.
Yeah, in Scottsdale.
Yeah.
And their target was General Yamashita's treasure, which was the biggest treasure, one of the biggest treasures in the world, and hidden somewhere on the island of Luzon. And that was a fascinating contract.
Is there anything spiritually wrong with seeking targets of rich?
I think there's nothing spiritual about remote viewing. Remote viewing
Wait a minute. Are you really sure?
Yes. But remote viewing is a mind tool. It's a mind process. It's a mind skill. It has nothing to do with spirit.
Well,
what you're talking about is ethics, art, not spirit. I think.
Well, no, actually, I did mean, are there spiritual aspects to it? And you know what? Yes, there are, Ed. By your own declarations, for example, you have encountered non-human entities.
But that,
And that is the spiritual, a spiritual aspect of it, in my way of thinking.
Well, everything, in our world, in our, as a remote viewer, everything exists as a pattern of information. And as things in other dimensions, spiritual entities, you and I, the television set, it's all information. So we're going to this information registry to download information, and that's the skill I'm talking about.
Well, yes, but if some of that information detected is clear evidence of spiritual existence beyond human, sorry, I mean, that qualifies.
If you say so.
Well, I guess I do.
I wouldn't call it evidence. We already have seen what the problem we have with evidence, which we're about to fix. In fact, if I'm going to furnish that map to Dave Holloway, to Natalie's father, but I'm also going to give it to Lex Lonewood, your webmaster,
right,
to post on your page.
That's what you need to do.
And if I myself and one other member of my team are qualified divers, and I have a lot of experience, and we have our hands full right now, or we would do this ourselves. But if we might have to eventually, if that body is not recovered, when we put that X there, but I think it will be. Otherwise, we go down and we do it ourselves.
Okay. I mean, you're making very definitive, relatively short-term statements. Good thing for you to do if you can back it up.
Oh, yes. You have not seen how wonderful and profound this discovery is, this breakthrough. It is. If only we had this during the military unit days, history would have been rewritten. And actually,
well,
I would
imagine the program would still be going.
It would be going, but you wouldn't hear about it.
Well, I wonder if that's not true anyway, Ed. I mean, that's a serious thing that I've been thinking about in all the years I've been talking about remote viewing. If, as you guys say, you know, you and the others, and, you know, I've interviewed, I think, all of them, Ingo included, everyone says remote viewing works. Nobody argues about that. They all say it works. If it really works, Ed, and if you've made, particularly if you've made this improvement, then if we're not doing it, then we're neglectful of national security.
Well, it wasn't that it was hit and miss. It just wasn't successfully. It didn't successfully support operation to the degree that we as commanders needed it to, and that's why. Because it hadn't evolved. It hadn't matured as a science yet.
I'm willing to buy that.
That's just changed. That's why I will probably be teaching CIA teams, but the change took 22 years of a lot of work and a lot of mistakes. But all those mistakes in the field and otherwise, you know, they count because you learn from the mistakes unless you make the same mistakes.
All right.
Again.
Well, let me try this line with you, please. This is very important to many people, Ed. You have predicted some very dire things for the world, from children dying to massive number of people worldwide dying from solar activity to, I mean, all kinds of very dire things, Ed.
I didn't want to talk about those at Easter.
Well, that's all right. No choice. Since you've admitted to mistakes with regard to children, missing children, is it also possible that some of these more dire predictions you've made could also be inaccurate?
The mistakes I made with regard to children were in locating the children.
I understand.
Being able to locate that.
Yes.
And I would point out to you that one of the predictions, that actually it's a forecast because we're looking over the horizon. These situations exist in the future. That's why they're viewable. That they're already there. Mind is outside of time, so it just vectors over to this new information position. One of the situations that was the most dire was starving children because there
was
no milk.
That's right.
And why was there no milk? Because dairy cows had developed some type of a disease.
Yes, sir.
Okay. The first dairy cow today, the report was today, in Canada with bovine spongiform encephalopathy, bovine, we thought it was an AIDS-related disease 20 years ago, looking over the horizon where all these children were dying. But it's mad cow disease, and a cow, not a steer, was diagnosed with that in Canada today. That's what I'm talking about. That's not going to just be an isolated instance.
Okay.
So that's...
But again, one of the rough areas was not just location with remote viewing. It's always been admitted, I think, that timelines were extremely difficult. Sometimes you could only mark them by some other event, and so you'd end up saying, well, when you see Mount so-and-so erupt, then look for something else to happen soon thereafter.
Correct. And the nearest recognizable preceding event, a window to bracket it.
Yeah. So, with regard to the timelines, isn't there still possibility of error?
Oh, absolutely, in terms of timeline. But we can work on that next. In fact, we are. We already started. Now that we have this breakthrough in precision guidance in terms of GPS-level accuracy, which we'll demonstrate. In fact, the skeptics will be put in their place quite soon. I promise you that. I guarantee that to you. That's how accurate this system is. But, yes, we still need to work on the time problem. We've got the search problem solved now. Can the time problem be solved? Is it soluble? I do not know, but we're certainly going to work on it one thing at a time.
Right.
But every science evolves. It takes a long time for sciences to evolve and for technologies to spin out from them.
Yeah, I agree. I really always have and do firmly believe there's some real aspects to what you're doing. It's real. But it's not perfected. It's not a perfected science. It's far from over, and we know less about our own minds and what we're capable of than any other part of our body.
Granted. Yeah, but at least this breakthrough is a real start, because it will put remote viewing on the map worldwide. And it will, that's why I picked these really sexy, big targets, like you see the pictures on your website of the Lisseau Blanc, which... the white bird,
yes,
which is our flagship project. Those kinds of things really will serve to put remote viewing on the map once and for all. It took a while, but like I say, we hung in there, we worked hard, and now we're gonna reap the glory.
Why do you think of all the remote viewers that came from the military program, you are virtually the only one who has chosen to look at the more dire aspects of what's ahead for mankind?
To save lives, hopefully, to save lives. That's what it's all about. You know, hey, guys, you know, there's something over the horizon you need to know about. If they would have known about that in Baton Rouge and when before Katrina or in any number of instances, lives would have been saved. And that's why we do it.
Well, when things like that happen, people tend to say, where were the remote viewers?
We've discussed that over the years on your show. We have to actually look in a certain direction to see things coming. It's not omnidimensional all the time. We have to be able to look specifically at something. The next earthquake, let's say, in the next earthquake with a massive loss of life or heavy damage in North America.
All right. Well, look, here would be an easy one for you. The next time we get a major Cat 4 or 5 hurricane that's in the Gulf somewhere, why don't you put together a team? I mean, you've got 2 or 3 days once it's in the southern part of the Gulf before it's going to strike any specific land. Nobody knows, really, 2 or 3 days out where the hell it's going to hit. They have sort of general projections and that are very wide. Why don't you put together a team and call it?
Actually, that's quite a doable thing. I've never thought about doing anything like that because I'm like a kid in a candy store right now with all the things I want to do with the discovery. But that's eminently doable, actually.
Well, it's a where thing, right?
Yes, it is, and that's what we have now. We have the tool to do that. So it's eminently doable, Art.
Well, I think June 1st marks the beginning of the hurricane season again. And people are going to be very, very nervous this year. So if 2 or 3 days out from landfall, you could call the exact point of landfall, Ed.
We'll do it. We'll do it. That's a great project. I didn't think of anything like that, but it's a great way to demonstrate what we've got now.
Yes, it is. And so, I hand you that one.
Okay.
And I'm looking for the gold. Don't forget the gold.
I'll take it. Well, the gold search is scheduled for the first week in June.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's when our team is going in. We don't have access to the area until Memorial Day, and so we can't get in there until then. So we're scheduled the first week of June to go in.
All right. Where to now? We've got so much to talk about.
I'd like to talk about the Lisseau Blanc, and of course this a very very important project about the next crop circle. But the Lisseau Blanc is our flagship project, and I'd like to say a few words about that.
Please do.
and I'd also like to remind people that this skill I'm talking about is a skill. We're not psychics. This is a trained ability. That's what I do. I teach people how to do this. So at some juncture in your show, I'd like to plug my teaching stuff.
You certainly may. I mean, we can do that here in a moment. Now, wait a minute. There is a difference you just delineated between psychics and remote viewers. I have had, I guess what I would call some psychics on the program recently who have done some pretty incredible things. For example, well, actually, she doesn't call herself a psychic, instead a witch. She's made some pretty remarkable predictions. Evelyn Paglini has been pretty dead on. So some psychics, Ed, seem very gifted.
Well, my mentor, the father of remote viewing, is the most gifted psychic not only I, but most people have ever run into, Ingo Swann.
Yes, and Ingo, indeed, is just an incredible, incredible man who's just hit so much. And, yeah, you're right, he's a psychic. So being a strong, natural psychic has obvious, I don't know, enhanced capabilities when you enter the world of remote viewing.
As I've mentioned on previous shows, when I train natural psychics, then there's a possibility, if they toe the line, it's possible for them to become not just professionals, but all stars. And a gifted natural psychic, after they're trained properly, can produce nominally twice as much detail in a given period of time, let's say an hour, than I could. I'd have to do two or three remote viewing sessions to produce that much detail. But if they're not trained, there's a problem. They cannot recognize when their own ego or their own analysis or their own imagination is influencing the data. Ingo Swann was extremely careful about this and studied himself. So that's why we did not use, in the military team, we did not use natural psychics to collect intelligence, because mm-hmm. when they were on target, they were really on.
Discipline problems.
It's a remote viewing is not that rigorous. It's as rigorous as any other skill, whether it's playing the piano or skiing. It takes some rigor. Otherwise, you can't do it. That's why you need a coach, and you need a structure and a model. And that's what I do.
Yeah, I can buy that. That's really is the center of what you do. You teach people how to do this.
But no psychic can match the performance that we're capable of now with this breakthrough technology.
You're obviously very excited about this.
Oh, I am. It's just beyond belief. 22 years, I've never seen anything. We could not have dreamt that something like this was possible. And all of a sudden, it's in our lap.
All right. Well, look, an honest, straightforward question. Again, with respect to the dire things, the children, the milk, the son's activities, how many people are going to die. Do you want to express any caution right now with respect to how quickly these things are going to happen, that you could be perhaps wrong? Do you want to correct any of the dire predictions that you've made?
No. I wouldn't have said them unless I, you know, the timelines, of course, I agree with you. Timelines are really shaky. But at least the predictions get people looking that way, looking at the sun, looking at cows being infected with mad cow disease and perhaps dairy cows, which has now happened. So these things are important. What are you going to do when you don't have milk for your baby? How are you going to feed it? Those kinds of things. You know, get ready. Be ready.
Soy comes to mind.
Well, so some kids are allergic to soy. You know, there's problems there too. So you have to, what are you going to do for your baby?
Yeah, I certainly. So you don't, even given that you admit there could be a timeline problem, which gives me a little bit of hope, because maybe it'll happen after I'm well and gone.
We always know there's a timeline problem. We know
good.
That now.
Well, see, that's a little bit of hope. Where before you were so sure, Ed, about even the when of it, really, that it was depressing to listen to. I mean, I guess this is going to happen, but you know, if it happens a generation or so from now, that's a big difference for most of us.
It's not going to be a generation. It's going to be within the next 5 years to a decade max. I'll hang my hat on
that. Okay, all right. hanging your hat on that.
Speaking about hanging your hat, there's one thing. I want to interrupt you for one thing. I have a bone to pick with the Bugsport cartoonist, Ted Bastian. His last week's Bugsport, which is still on your website on remote viewing, he's got me remote viewing a gray, and then the gray uses me, my ectoplasm, as not only a coat rack, but a hat rack, too.
Really?
I mean, I get no respect.
I know. I know. It's not an easy job that you do. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned grays, because I had a person who emailed me and wanted you to take the time, if you could again, to tell us everything you know about grays, to describe them, to tell us what you believe they're all about, what they really are, all of that. Are you willing to do that? By the way, I want to take a second out to, again, really thank Premier Radio Networks. They're my company, as you know. Craig Kitchen, who runs it, he's president. And then, of course, the parent company, Clear Channel Radio. They've all been so incredibly supportive. I mean, what I've done is certainly a big shock to many people, I'm sure, including, no doubt, them. But they stepped right forward and said, no, you know, let's do the show from the Philippines. Now, that's not like an everyday idea. So I want to thank them for being as supportive as they've been. And so one of these days soon, I expect to be able to send some webcam shots to you of downtown Metro Manila at night, which should be a pretty interesting viewing, to say the least. And, of course, a lot of other things. Checking the webcam tonight, you will find, some of the typical geography to be found over there. So go to Coast to Coast AM and click on Art's webcam, take a look-see. In the meantime, it's back to Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames. And, Major, I'd like you to go ahead and do your plug now, if you would. I love to allow any guest to plug what they're doing, and what you do is remote viewing. So what do you want to plug?
I want to plug my teaching products and my workshop.
Okay.
That's how I make a living, but treasure hunting's a nice moonlight job.
Will you, as I have done, continue to teach from Ukraine?
Oh, absolutely. I love my job. I've been doing it for 22 years, and now it's really interesting, even more every day. So I'll be doing working from Ukraine.
Okay. So the workshops, how do people get involved? What does it cost? All that kind of stuff.
The workshop, my next workshop for beginners, if you want to learn how to remote view from me and my team of professionals, is in Las Vegas on the 20th and the 21st of May, a weekend. And you can call the number that I will give you to enroll for that. It's the same number that if you would like to learn more about remote viewing, you can do that by going to my website, and that's learnrv.com. And you'll see that I have a set of DVDs, and that's the premier set RV set in the world.
Uh-huh.
That's for order. You can order that online, or you can call a toll-free number that's manned 24 hours a day, and that number is 1-866-607-8439.
Okay, that's, I think, a different number than you've given out previously. Is that correct?
Negative.
It's not. Okay, 1-866-607-8439, and at that number you'll be able to either order DVDs, inquire about
the workshops,
or get involved in any way you want.
And if you want to take your time and do some research, go to learnrv.com. Go to my teaching forum. That's free. I teach advanced skills to all of my students, and that training is free. And I'm there all the time.
All right. As close as the net. So being in Ukraine won't change a thing.
Negative. Nor has it.
All right. So one more time, folks. 866-607-8439. Crop circles. Now, one way you're claiming in here, it seems like, that you're going to say when one is going to form, which means people could set up ringside seats and actually watch a crop circle form?
Correct.
Now, there's
more to it than that.
Well, that's quite enough. You're sticking your neck out pretty far on that. X marks the spot, huh?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, what about the timeline part of this? I mean, suppose you get a big crowd out there waiting and...
Well, actually, we don't have that down. We just have the next down. Now, you can average, if one averages the time, the average time between one circle and another, it's usually no more than, in North America, it's usually no more than, let's say, 3 weeks or a month. Now, many times there are crop circles formed, but the farmers don't want their crops trampled down, so that they never say anything about that.
That's right.
Understand.
Yes, I do.
And other times the crops are just simply not found. The circles are not found. But let me give you my modus operandi behind this. It's really important instead of just for a cute entertaining thing.
All right.
First of all, I think the SETI program is looking in the wrong direction. I really do. And I believe that the crop circles are ETI calling cards, that they're here. Extraterrestrial intelligence is here, and these circles are their calling cards.
Well, we know some of them are bogus.
Of course.
We know that. And how do we discern between the bogus and the non-bogus?
Well, if you do some research on the web, you can see the differences between a man-made and a non-man-made crop circle, especially in the nodes.
The nodes. That's right. There's a molecular change that actually occurs.
There is. And, in fact, remote viewing teams have actually tried to study and understand what goes on there, and we cannot.
I remember once you said you thought crop circles were markers, time markers, wasn't it?
Yes. Years ago, we thought that they were, being used as reference points, but I don't think that's the case anymore. We were really interested in how they were produced and what system was producing them, whether it was plate tectonic movement or whatever. That's why we first started studying, and then I got more interested. Here's why. First of all, when you have a circle, the next crop circle, for instance. Next, it refers to our moving time, the way the human mind manages reality. We perceive time flowing, and most of us know that that's just an illusion. That these circles, as well as you at home in your condo in the Philippines, is a reality that remote viewers know. You're already there, but you're over there. We can look at you there. And because mind is outside of time, mind, the universal mind, just looks down on this broad planopy of events, and they already exist. So the crop circles are already there. We just have to turn our attention as remote viewers to them and then do our job. So the next circle, to some people, is no more than that. Oh, you know, they're right, here's the circle. And by the way, I think that Lex, your webmaster, has probably put by now a map of where the next circle will be in North America.
Really?
Yes, and it's down to a 10-kilometer radius. The reason we didn't get it any closer, we didn't have time enough. It would have taken another half day to pinpoint it down to within 500 meters, say, and we didn't have time to do
that. Again, using the new process.
Roger. Uh-huh. No, we used the new process for this as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and that circle will appear in northern Alberta near the British Columbia border. That particular circle, and it'll be just to the west of a little town called Clear Prairie, Alberta.
And you're saying this will be the next North American circle?
Yes, the next non-man-made circle.
Okay.
Okay, so that red ring is 10 kilometers in radius if you go to your website.
And on the timeline?
We don't know. We haven't solved that problem.
Have in a way. I mean, you've said next. Well, you know, there's going to be North American crop circles. That's for damn sure. So, I guess any that appear prior to this one will have to be regarded in your mind as frauds. I mean, they're not real, right?
Either that, or it's a miss on our part, which we don't.
Oh, a miss?
Mm-hmm.
Could it be?
I don't think so. it would have to be one or the other. We either have to miss it or it's a...
You've got your neck pretty far out this morning.
That's okay. I'll stick it out even further. But here's why I think this is so important, Art. So important. If we can start forecasting the next circles and have people waiting for the formation...
Oh, yes.
That will mean to this higher intelligence, which is forming the circles, and we believe it's a higher intelligence that's already here. Seti's looking out of the stars. They're here. This higher intelligence, this system that creates the circles, will know that we're there and that we had foreknowledge of this particular circle creation, the formation of that. They will know that we've mastered the ability to use focused consciousness. And in so doing, I think that we demonstrate a higher level of intelligence ourselves, which may mean to them that we've evolved and we turn these tools towards discovering our place in the universe. But so what I'm saying is, by anticipating and being present at the crop circle formation event,
we will show them something.
It may very well be the equivalent of warp drive in the context of Star Trek in the Prime Directive.
I got it, yeah.
And resolving contact. And that's, I really believe that that's what may happen.
So then what, Ed? Crop circles are a measure of our intelligence? In other words, when we can finally predetermine where one is going to appear, that will be a communication to them that we have arrived?
That's right, that we've arrived at a level of consciousness that's required by the Federation for contact. It means that we've evolved. Evolution takes place in the mind, you know, the body.
I believe that.
Really doesn't evolve. It's, you know, evolution's up there. And I think those acts by doing that will result in contact. And I really hope when that happens that they are not the Ferengi.
I hope they're not, too. I consider it about a 50-50 proposition. Why should we imagine that they would have our best interests in mind? Now, that means they could either actively be not our friends, or they could be so superior to us that they simply would not notice us any more than we notice, you know, the anthill.
I don't think those circles are for them. I think they're for us, and we need they're a conundrum.
I hope you're right.
Their puzzles will be solved.
I hope you're correct.
And if they are Ferengi, then I'm going to trade them. I plan on trading them some Earth women, probably American women, for some of their advanced technology. I had Lex Luthor ain't got nothing on me.
Okay, well, there's always ways to make money out of whatever it is that happens, even if it's the Ferengi, I guess. All right.
You asked about the Greys, Art.
I certainly did. The Greys. Everything you can tell us about their motives, about what they really are, about those who drive them, what they look like, whatever.
I will tell you the only thing that I know about the Greys, and my research has led me to believe, based upon some solid remote viewing data, and I don't know a lot about them. I don't understand them. But I will tell you this, the incident with Travis Walton, the Travis Walton abduction, which is a pretty famous case in ufology.
Yes, it is.
That case, when we put ourselves where he went, and it was a physical event, he wasn't lying, he really was beamed up into something, somewhere. That somewhere had five Greys, five entities that almost exactly match the description that people have given them.
Oh, I completely believe Travis. I've interviewed him several times.
Oh, he's been on your show?
No. Oh, yeah, several times. No question about it. That was a real McCoy. I interviewed Travis, and I interviewed his boss and several others, and the whole story is just incredible and obviously true. That would be my judgment.
Well, as remote viewers, we are not biased by reports. We prefer to do the work because we have direct access to the truth, and that's why I'm in this business. But
you seem to have direct access to information. Whether or not it's always the truth, I don't know.
Remote viewers, when they access the universal mind, when their minds connect with that, with what we call the matrix, that's what we call it. It's facts. Let's drop the word truth. The facts, just the facts, ma'am. The facts in the Travis Walton case are that his report about what these entities look like is basically correct. They do look like the heretofore described Greys, the description of these things.
Right.
And anything beyond that, I honestly don't know.
Motivations? I mean, are they, for example, individually intellectual creatures? Are they a hive mind? Are they a creation of others?
The only other thing I understand about, I don't know. They could just as easily be a bionic creatures created by others. We haven't researched it. We have not looked really into that. I think it would be, what we wanted to do was actually have a tete-a-tete with them, meet them, and have them tell us what they are. Because I would rather do that than try to research. Remote viewing is difficult. It's hard work. And it's a whole lot easier to sit down, you know, and tap them on the shoulder and say, okay, we could see that you would land here or you'd be here. Tell us about yourself. But here's one thing we do know, however. Their brain structure is extremely different than ours, to the point where, and I think I've mentioned this before, remember in Whitley Strieber's original book, Communion, where he says that he was in a sort of a catatonic state and his bug-eyed creature was looking at him. He perceived it to be possibly female, and he was frozen in terror.
Yes.
And the question was, he asked some questions. Well, these things are not necessarily masochistic. The way their brain is structured, they don't have a bicameral brain. It's a solid unit. And their emotional system is very, very different. It takes them approximately 6 seconds to process our emotions, to see that they're frightening us.
Hmm.
So while you think you're getting this blank stare, actually I don't think they have eyelids, that you're getting this stare and you think that they're purposeless, they don't care about you.
Instead, they've not yet digested what it is.
Correct.
That's
they
coming from you. Okay, that's interesting.
They haven't integrated the emotion. It takes them that long before they back out and they realize they've scared you. They're very, very physiologically different than we are. Whether or not they are created by bionic beings or created in a test tube by another race, their progenitors or whatever, I don't know.
Do you know anything about their intentions? Are they friendly or benign or not?
I know that there is a race very far away, possibly in another galaxy, that watches them. I don't know what the connection is. Those particular controllers, I call them, and so somewhere, they're very far away.
Controllers?
I call them controllers, yeah. They appear to be running things, at least in this galaxy.
Well, that starts to answer the question about whether they're puppets or...
No, it really doesn't, because there's no chain of custody between that we've established between the controllers and the Greys. Are they just observing what the Greys are doing as well as observing
or
everybody else?
Or orchestrating it.
Yes, I don't know if that's the case. So I don't know who the progenitors of the Greys are at all. But I do know that if we get further into this and we do have contact, we'll probably meet our own progenitors. So this system, we know as viewers, as professional viewers, manipulated DNA in the Rift Valley a long time ago, hot hominid DNA, and made us what we are today, good or bad. So... They may not be our progenitors, but they did manipulate us. But they did manipulate humans and human DNA a long time ago, millions of years ago.
Well, to many, that will make them our gods, our creators.
Well, and harking back to my point about Whitley, one of the things that he tried in his mind to say, if you remember from the book, to this bug-eyed Gray, was, you have no right. I quote, unquote, you have no right.
Yes.
And the transmission back was, we do. And my premise is that there's only two people that have the right to do that to you, your parents and your creator.
There you go. So you tend toward believing the latter.
I'd rather go with facts than beliefs, because I don't trust my own mind. We're so fallible, Art. We make wrong decisions all the time. That's why... Viewing is the way I go when I want facts. Yes, at some juncture, if somebody holds my feet to the fire and says, what do you believe about them? I could probably try to pull a rabbit out of the hat, but honestly, this time I don't think I can. I don't know what to believe about them. But I'm hanging some hopes on contact because I see mankind going down really fast, really, really fast. And I've talked to some Hollywood types, some directors, and they agree with me. That probably the only thing that could get mankind to look up and away again instead of towards nuclear weapons and warfare and all this is contact. So that's why it's so important to me. That's what I've decided, why I've decided to commit resources.
That is a true statement. I'm not sure what could possibly lead us from what otherwise appears to be an inevitable, disastrous road.
I agree. You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, except contact. That very well might do it, but it would have to be a benign, teaching, fatherly
mentor
kind of and then too, if information that they were our creators came with this, Ed, I'm not so comfortable that it would be digested without a great deal of violence and disruption, frankly. Guarantee, at some point here, we will open the phone lines, which are ringing off the hook Fred Dames, and it's always a pretty it's generally a pretty volatile session. I would expect that tonight. Ed, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, listen, what else would you like to cover before we do that, before we open lines? I'd love to give the audience a shot at you.
Oh, great. Well, they can give me their best shot. But before they do, I'd like to briefly discuss what we're doing with our international flagship project, the recovery of the Liseau Blanc, the White Bird aircraft. This is our flagship project because it is of interest, great deal of interest to the Europeans, particularly the French, who lost two heroic airmen when they tried to beat Charles Lindbergh's transatlantic flight and win the Ortigue Prize. Mr. Raymond Ortigue in 1926, I believe, offered $25,000 to the first person or crew that could make a Paris-New York flight or vice versa.
Right.
And Charles Nungesser and Francois Colli, his navigator, these were decorated airmen. Nungesser was the number two ace in World War One, French ace. So these were not lightweights. When they took off from Paris and were out to New York to win this prize, but disappeared. And that disappearance was a great loss to the French people, sort of like the loss of Saint-Exupéry.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great loss to them. But they welcomed Charles Lindbergh 12 days later with open arms when he landed in Paris after having taken off from New York. What my team is saying is that flight, the Liseau Blanc's flight, made it to North America. The crew did not make it to New York. We're saying that they crashed about 400 kilometers north of New York City into the mountains in New Hampshire, just across the Maine border. Lex may have your webmaster may have placed my map of the area near New Hampshire's lake.
So somebody could go and look for the remains of the aircraft?
Well, we're going to recover the remains. And the reason that circle is 20 kilometers, we don't want to tell people exactly where the aircraft is. We want the glory of recovering.
So you know exactly where?
Oh, we're going to, exactly. And that operation is scheduled for September.
Well, see, you can close the deal with something of this magnitude. You know what I mean by close the deal.
Yes, I do. Yeah. But this is not just a solution to a mystery, for instance, like finding Amelia Earhart's remains of her aircraft. That brings closure to something. This changes the pages of history because it proves that the French beat Lindbergh by 12 days. And even though they would not have been eligible for the Ortigue Prize, they really did accomplish a transatlantic mission. And we also recover, by recovering the aircraft, we may be lucky enough, depending on the location and degree of degradation, the remains of the crew as well, and return them to the French. So it's a big thing for us. It's our flagship project. And it's a whole lot more fun than finding dead kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. I certainly hope that you nail one of these soon, Ed. You really need it.
We've got what it takes now, Art. We've got what it takes. I wouldn't be so overconfident, and you know, it's coming across as arrogance, but it's not. It's just total confidence. I know what we have now, and it's a profound discovery. It's great.
All right. Fascinating, and I hope it proves out, and you've certainly got your neck out a mile tonight, so... Maybe. Want to take a few calls?
I'd be glad to.
Let's see what happens. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Art. Hello, Ed.
Hi.
I am so blessed to be on the line after 9 years of listening to Coast, Art, in following your show and your personal
Appreciate
life.
All that, sir. Do you have a question for Ed?
Ed? Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
I had got on the computer and checked out the remote viewing. You talk about natural remote viewers?
No, I don't talk about that. I do not talk, sir, about natural remote viewers.
All right. Well, I became very excited when I heard what was going on here several years ago, and I got scared. I'm a person that has stage fright, and I was very interested in what you were doing, very excited about what you're doing, and it's a very good thing what you are doing. And
okay.
It's the beginning of something very large, I believe.
Me too.
The money issue and the travel issue has turned me off. And I'd like to get turned back on somehow. I live in New York on the shores of Canandaigua Lake. And I'd like to be a part of what you're doing. I feel like I really need to be a part of what you're doing.
All right, we can arrange that for you. Ed, go ahead and give your plug again.
Well, the DVD sets, if you have a DVD player and you're not a technophobe, that's the best way to go. It's superb instruction, step-by-step instruction. And learn more about that at learnrv.com, where I teach, or you can call and order the DVDs at that toll-free number.
Okay. 866-607-8439. All right. LearnRV, which is easy, learnrv.com.
Right.
Or the toll-free number, 866-607-8439.
And if you, I have a workshop in May, a beginner's workshop in Las Vegas. And if you want to come to that, I'll make sure that you learn.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hello, Ed and Mr. Bell.
Yes, sir.
My name is Casey, and I'm calling from WGOW, the Talk Monster in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
Well, I just had a quick question for Ed, and it relates to you as well, Mr. Bell.
Okay.
I think the mass consciousness experiments that, not really experiments, but somewhat the feeling out of the mass consciousness experiments that have been conducted somewhat through your program are rather powerful, and I think that possibly that's tapping onto something. But my question is to Ed is, does he know of any kind of organization that is currently investigating the promise and potential of using the mass consciousness, say, national radio broadcast, getting people? And I know some people compare it to praying, but, I mean, I'm not trying to say it's praying or if it is or isn't, but I'm just saying, is there any organizations investigating this actively? And, Mr. Bell, if you are able to broadcast directly to me whenever you go over there instead of going through the web, if you will, then that would be great, too. But anyway, that's all I had.
All right. So, yes, Ed, the mass consciousness thing is, to me, fascinating. It worked. I have no doubt in my mind it worked to the point where it scared me because I didn't know what I was toying with. And, of course, Princeton is pursuing it. I don't know of any other mass experiments that are going on presently, nationally, media-wise. But what do you think about it all, Ed?
Well, actually, I think Maharishi University or something like that, Maharishi University, they have one of the premises, operating premises there, is that they're trying to affect the world by using mass consciousness projections of.
Do you think they could conceivably be successful?
I think when there is a threshold number of people, I believe when there's a threshold number of people that really can be focused and directed, that
yes,
mountains might be movable.
Yeah,
I really believe that.
I really believe that too, Ed. It's just that I'm very tentative. I reached and passed the bar on this one in the sense that I conducted the experiments and it worked so well it scared the hell out of me. I thought, what am I doing? And I thought, well, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm going to stop until I can figure this out a little bit or try and figure it out a little bit.
Well, we know in my business what we can get away with, but there's a whole a gray zone out there, a no man's land where we kind of stay away from because we don't have any control. We have control within the boundaries of our little compound. For instance, we can slow your clock down and those kinds of things. You've seen that. But when you get outside, when you get outside the gates of the compound, allegorically speaking, Katie, bar the door. We don't know. We don't understand the dynamics. We're just now beginning to gain some insight into remote viewing, which is a relatively passive act, and I don't think I'm ready to step too far away from that compound. And
all right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning. Okay, I've got to cut that out. Only first names on the program. So your first name is?
Yeah, Martin.
Okay, Martin, proceed.
I have just two questions, and one I have a little explanation or something I need to say about it. I'm at a juncture in my life, and I've been getting pretty much nowhere, and I'm thinking seriously about the going in for the some kind of psychic training, which I've been advised to do in the past. And remote viewing seems like it might be just the thing. Now,
okay, but it's not psychic training.
Yes, I kind of realize that. Anyway, my questions for two questions for Ed, and I'll probably take the answers off the air. Is one, is it possible that a person can, and have you ever done it, remote viewed yourself earlier in life? And secondly, with regards to the extraterrestrial picture, aren't there some others out there that you would know of who are kind of more closer to our relatives, closer in terms of physical body style?
All right, all right. That's a good one. They're both good ones. Ed, on the others that may be out there, any of them close to us in body style? Any Earth-like beings out there?
There is. I won't call them a race. There are some individuals who actually use physical craft. Now, not all UFOs are physical. They're just lights in the sky, and people arbitrarily call it a craft. I hate that word, vehicle or craft, and it just may be a window, a portal. We've talked about these kinds of things before, kind of an eyeball projection.
Yes.
From another part of the galaxy. But there is another race that is observing us, or a group of individuals observing us that look very much like us. They're a little bit more hardier build than we are. They're sort of squared off, but they do look very much like us. However, we suspect, and have suspected for quite some time, that they're homegrown humans, that they were actually raised on another planet to be a sort of aid group, as intermediaries, that they're actually raised on another planet by another race so that we won't get scared a la the Arthur C. Clarke childhood's end idea where, you know, the higher race looks like devils and we have this, that kind of thing. But that's what we think about this race. Other than that, I don't know of any other humanoid. I know some things that look like newts that are really, you know, 4 foot high, 3.5, 4 foot high newts that are very high technology. But
all right. And he also asked about viewing yourself earlier in life.
I've never done that. It's very, that's a very neat thing. That's why I like to teach.
Usually I assume one proceeds forward to see the future because you already know what went on in the past. But
yeah, that's how I found my fiance. I actually...
Really?
Yeah, I was lonely, and I used RV to find her. Yeah.
Did you know?
I did.
How did that work?
Well, I looked at my next mate. Ed's next mate, that kind of thing. I actually didn't use it to find a perfect mate or any of that kind of stuff. I just wanted to know what my next
one. Who's the next one, huh?
Roger.
Uh-huh. And then you would have had to have virtually been able to identify her physically, I guess, and then know where she was, and then somehow communicate with her a lot to ask for.
Go there. Yeah, go there and find her. That's not as difficult as you think for a pro, but my pros know this. Many of my students.
Were you at all concerned when you narrowed it down and said, ooh, Ukraine?
Yeah, that's a concern.
Not Wichita, Ukraine.
Right. Now, remember, I did not, and there's kind of a paradox there, because now what does that mean? Why is this my next mate? Was I remote viewing something I would have done anyway? You get the picture here.
I do.
Yeah, so there are paradoxes out there. And they're probably not really paradoxes, but I'm blonde, and I can't absorb a lot of information at one time, so I'll just go with the flow.
You're blonde.
And she's kind of beautiful.
A blonde remote viewer. First time caller line, you're on the air with the blonde.
Hello.
Hello, yes.
Oh, hi. Congratulations on your new bride.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm new to all this, and I've only been listening to your program for about 2 months, and I realize I've been missing a lot. But Major Dames, I have one question. I've looked at your website, and I'm going to start saving today to buy your program. But my question is, have you ever had a student that's totally bombed out? I mean, do you have to have a talent or a gift for what you're teaching?
No, we avail ourselves of a natural innate birthright. Everybody has it, and we just take that and turn it into a skill. But to answer the first part of your question, yes, I have had two students in 22 years who have I used every tool in my toolbox, and I'm embarrassed to say they were untrainable.
One of them
did not want to be trained. His wife, he was a produce director in a grocery store. His wife demanded that he take my course, so it really wasn't his decision, so I can understand that.
Uh-huh.
The other one, there are a couple of other instances where the people were pot smokers, and you can't focus and maintain, you can't focus consciousness when you're on pot. You have to clear your system of that.
So then, of course, there was Donahue.
Donahue was very eminently trainable, but his ego, he self-destructed because of the ego, but he was a very good remote.
He did go into an interesting direction, didn't he?
He did. He was a very good student, and his work was excellent. I put him in front of a camera too much, though. So his ego, his head exploded.
Okay, well, anyway, caller, so there you have it.
Thank you very much.
There can be total failures, okay?
Okay.
Good luck. Hope you're not one of them. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Good morning.
Yeah, Art, I need to talk to him and get him to either call me on the phone.
Well, I don't know if he makes out calls.
Well,
Ed,
I want to talk to him about the Holloway case.
I see. Well, my advice would be to email him. And Ed, toward that end, why don't you give out? You want to give out an email address directly? Why not?
Sure. Yeah, if you go to my RV forum and you look at my profile, the email is there, or you can directly
just tell us what it is.
Ed Dames at scispymaster.com.
Wait a minute. Ed Dames at Psy, yes. PSI?
Roger.
Do it all.
Ed Dames, two Ds. Ed Dames at scispymaster.com.
Okay. And Psy is PSI.
Right, yeah, that's a romanization.
Spymaster, everybody ought to be able to handle.
Psy is a romanization of the Greek letter Psi, which is commonly known in the West and in Europe as being related to parapsychology and paranormal things.
And you would declare that the average person, a very high percentage of the average population would be trainable in RV. So it would be a very small percentage that would be total flops.
Very small indeed. And my natural abilities were very average, extremely average. It was only by dint of a whole lot of labor was I able to become good at what I do.
You know,
I wanted
to. Yeah, I would think, Ed, that people who fork out money for something like this, they already sort of passed the first bar. That means they want to do it.
It's a commitment, yes.
So I would think you'd have a very high success rate. You've got people who really want to learn, really want a remote view, otherwise they wouldn't fork over the bucks.
Right, and I work hard at my job. I fail if they don't learn. It's the teacher's fault. It's not their fault.
Do you hear from a lot of former students?
Many of the former students have become not only my close friends, but the people on my team are my former students.
Once again, Major Ed Dames. Ed, welcome back.
Thank you again.
Anything that we've missed in the show so far before I go back to the lines that you want to get to?
Nothing that I can think of. I just realized that I've done Easter shows with you, Christmas, New Year's, Halloween, and Father's Day.
That's amazing. We've just about run the gamut.
Well, 9.5 years.
9.5 years. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Major, I wanted to ask you a question. You were talking about Osama bin Laden. Do you think the military will use your intelligence or your remote viewing and be able to capture him first? And a second question, would you be willing to conquer something like finding the lost Ark of the Covenant?
Okay.
The second question first. I used my military team under the guise of advanced training to research and describe using remote viewing the Ark of the Covenant. Fascinating project. But the reason I would not want to recover, and by the way, it's hidden. It's actually hidden.
Still.
It's still hidden in Jerusalem. It's not in Ethiopia. It's in Jerusalem. The reason why you would not want to recover it, it would really be a catalyst to World War III. I mean, World War III has really started. It's a slow burn. But this thing is really... The Ark of the Covenant is really claimed by three nations, by three different religions. And to pull it out of its hiding place and expose it and expose its location and its keepers would really catalyze war, I believe. And that's the reason I don't want to to
All right.
put an X on that particular.
All right, Osama.
Osama, oh, he is not my primary target. As I've said, my primary target is Mr. Basayev, because he purposely targeted children in a terrorist attack.
Well, the government really wants Osama.
The CIA will do that. They'll use a cutout, somebody that I know and has their own private company and is not directly related to CIA, and they'll hire me to do that. And that's how that will go down.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hey, good morning. I tell you, I really enjoy your show. Your show really helps me through the night working. Now, Major, so I have a question, and hopefully I have a comment after you give me your answer. I am calling from New Orleans, so you can imagine being a victim of Katrina and everything we've been through. Earlier I was listening, and there was some mention of, you know, if possible you can help for this hurricane season. Could you give me your answer? How? You know, some encouragement would really help. So if you can tell me, I'd like you to give me that answer, and I'd really have a comment afterwards.
Okay, the answer is, per our Art's suggestion, is where will hurricanes actually hit landfall? Where will the landfall be? And that is something that I and my team can now do quite accurately.
So expect a prediction from Ed as the season progresses, sir. Your comment?
My comment, Will, is if hopefully this is true, and I do believe in what you're saying, is that tomorrow morning, Monday morning, you definitely need to contact NOAA, contact the National Hurricane Center, and let them know, because we're definitely, you know, we're only less than 70 days away.
Yeah, that's right.
And the last thing we really need right now
is another hurricane.
So, I mean, you know, I appreciate, you know, letting me get through, and it's my first time calling. I really enjoy your show, but it's something that's really important.
I understand. I appreciate your call, sir, from New Orleans. And, yeah, I had...
That's not going to happen.
How do you know?
Because once the FAA came to me, and their security chief, and asked me for help in determining where Abu Nidal would strike next, what kind of device he would make to put on an aircraft, and what they should look for, and those kinds of things.
Yes.
But the problem with working directly for a responsible government agency, responsible to the citizens of the United States, is the directors would be fired if they work for me, because we're still mixed up with a lot of
They're not ready for you anyway. Until you hit a few of the
That's
ones you've
right.
talked about tonight.
Absolutely. Even then, we won't be used directly.
I don't know. If you began hitting them one after another, the big ones, calling hurricane landfalls, that kind of thing, 2 or 3 days out, you'd get their attention real quick.
Yeah, the CIA,
and if you didn't, you'd get everybody else's.
Right.
All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yeah, good morning, Ed. Morning, Art.
Hi.
My question is, the last time that Ed was on the show, he had talked about a paradox, and I don't remember exactly how it went, but it had something to do with he couldn't tell you where you were going to dinner the next night, because if he had told you, then that would not come true. Now, you also on that show had talked about he had a terrorist attack that was coming up, and he couldn't tell you anything about it. Now, my question is, if you have that paradox and you tell us where the terrorist attack is, can't you prevent the terrorist attack from occurring?
Good question. Ed?
Yes, because we're not telling the terrorists. We're telling somebody else. We're telling you. And if that still deals with the paradox, we think, but we're not sure. The way it came up was, if a remote viewer, where Art was going to eat dinner, assuming that he was going to eat another dinner, that he would be alive, those kinds of preconceived notions, could we tell Art what the data was? Well, it turns out that if you have any intention whatsoever as a viewer to leak that information to the subject, then you can't remote view where they're going to eat dinner. It's tautological.
But couldn't paradoxes then conceivably be used as preventative measures after the fact?
We were talking about pure intelligence collection, about knowing something and then stopping it.
Yes.
That's what we do. I mean, that's our job. What I'm saying is that when you're providing information to an individual about their future, then it's as if you can't get the information to begin with if you intend upon providing the information to the individual.
Okay.
That's the kind of thing we run
into. That's hard to understand. It's already, well, that's why they call it a paradox, I guess.
That's right.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, Art. Hello, Ed. Hey, Art, you had said something earlier about did Ed have any moral issues with using remote viewing
for money.
For gain, right. But I have two questions on those lines.
Sure.
One is, don't you see using your remote viewing skills to find children as a way of getting personal gain? And second, mm-hmm. on your website, I got to your LearnRV website through AaronCDonahue.com. And don't you see that as a way of some sort of moral obligation to Aaron, since a lot of your information is similar to his from the shows he's done in the past from 2003 forward?
Okay. Ed, well, I don't know where to start here. You want to start with Aaron or what?
If the question could be more discreet and concise, then I'd be able to answer it.
All right. It's pretty concise when he says, do you use finding children as a means to... Well,
let's put it this way.
It means money. If you find children, you're going to make money.
There's an easy way to answer that. My time would be much better spent economically to find treasure and to go bounty hunting. I have a member of my team who's armed. He's jumping at the bit to go after a few of the big names with big money. And my team is not always happy we don't make any money by going after kids. We use our own funds, mostly my funds. My team members are volunteers. The fact that we do that it's just like John Walsh. Does John Walsh make money by using America's Most Wanted to do what he does? Yes, he does.
Yeah, I suppose.
Why
so,
did he start it? Well, he started it because Adam, his child, was killed, murdered, and decapitated.
That's right.
So, ethically speaking, I feel a responsibility to, and as a father, I feel a responsibility to go out there and bring some degree of closure and to grief-stricken parents. Whether or not that makes money is totally irrelevant to me.
Well, I think it would be incorrect to say money is totally irrelevant.
I said whether or not that particular act makes money is totally irrelevant to me.
Well, but in the big picture, obviously, if you start nailing it, whether it's children or anything else, the money will come.
Of course, just like John Walsh gets paid quite well for
putting together American Muslims. I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying that it's a fact. International Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Good evening, Ed and Art.
Yes, good evening.
I think you have a hit. You made a prediction about rust in wheat in Africa. On CBC Radio a couple months back, they had a Canadian grain scientist who took Canadian cultivars over to Africa where there is a rust outbreak, and our cultivars cannot stand this new rust variety.
Really?
Yep. And I'm pretty sure Ed made that prediction about a year ago.
I seem to recall, Ed...
Yeah, we're talking about a mutation of Claviceps purpurea, which the royal fungus, that's how it translates into Latin, the royal fungus. There's a mutation that occurs there, and that is remote viewers have looked over the horizon and seen that as an extremely damaging fungi. And that it floats over on trade winds to South America, and it moves up. Up into North America eventually, and ravages wheat crops.
Just like
as
the killer
right
bees.
Now.
Just like the killer bees.
Faster, much faster. Yeah, because the killer bees are not carried on the wind, and they need a lot more life support than a fungi,
mm-hmm.
Spores, fungal spores.
All right. Well, he thinks you've got a hit there. Would you agree with that, Ed?
I'd have to study exactly the species and what's going on there to match it with our data and say whether it's a hit or not.
Okay. Do you keep records, careful records of hits versus now known misses, or what?
No, I keep archives of all the projects, and then my team and I, especially my partner Brent Miller, sit down and brainstorm and go over what we did right, what we did wrong, and how to improve things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do that.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
My name's Bobblehead from Downingtown.
Okay.
Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I had a question about for this guy. I don't know if I really like him. He won't tell us how exactly it works, and if it's a spiritual thing.
It's okay that you don't like me. That's fine. It's not a spiritual thing. I'm telling you over and over again, there is nothing spiritual about remote viewing. It is a mind tool as much as learning mathematics or number theory or something else like that, period. Spiritual stuff is that's what you, when you can't, I can't tell you about spiritual stuff because when you deal with the spirit, there are no words. There's no way to communicate.
Well, there's
there is no way to communicate spiritual experiences to another human being because spiritual experiences are not in the mind.
I don't know. How do you know that?
Try it. You tell me about your experiences and try to get me to understand that. Because you can't understand it.
Oh, I've definitely had a lot of experience, and it's not.
Yeah, but make him understand it, is what he's saying.
Okay, well, over the last year, I had an instance where I stayed in a graveyard for 4 days without sleeping or eating. And I was in touch with a lot of spirits.
Well, I bet you were. You're probably hallucinating your tail end off by the third day.
No, I'm not. I spent a week and a half in a mental hospital, too.
Uh-huh.
It was over Christmas.
I rest my case.
Well, now, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm perfectly normal.
Well, then why spend all that time in a mental hospital?
Well, because my parents wanted to make sure I was all right.
So they were concerned.
Well, yeah, they were concerned because I was over... Over Christmas holiday, I wasn't home. I went from work, and I ended up staying there. But actually, there's a story behind that.
Okay, well, I'll forego that story. Ed, any further comments to add to the end of that call?
The caller brings up a really important point, regardless of other things. That the point, again, is remote viewing is a mind tool. It's just as much a mind tool as, even though it uses a modality that's not very comfortable because we don't understand consciousness and we only have working hypotheses about how we're doing what we do, it's still in the mind. When you drop down into core, your essence, that thing that's harvested when you die, what's the only thing that's left that leads, that's spiritual. That's the spirit. And what that does...
But I'm not sure, and I challenged this earlier, and I do again, that there's not... That you're not rubbing up right against the spiritual aspect of our psyche.
Maybe you're right. I don't know. I've been in this business for 22 years, and I do not know. I'm a mechanic. I'm a technician. I'm an applicant. I don't write books. I go out in the field and put this to use where the rubber meets the road. I don't talk about the philosophy of remote viewing,
okay.
All of that.
All right.
That's what I do.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Yes.
CQDEKB8WUP, sir.
Yes, sir.
My question for Ed is, have you ever tried to remote view the Kennedy assassination?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Years ago. Unfortunately, I did not believe at the time. I absolutely did not buy into the idea that there was a conspiracy. And I had Mel Riley, one of the team members, when I hired him. After I retired from the military, I hired Mel Riley as one of my employees. I had him remote view the Kennedy assassination, thinking that it's just going to be, you know, some wild card with a high caliber weapon.
Yes.
And that was not the case. It was a conspiracy. There was a flechette that was fired from that actually was remotely fired from the dashboard of the car that man was in and went through his Adam's apple. And I was so shocked, and for 2 days I was beside myself. I just could not believe that an element within my own country would take out the President of the United States. I was extremely upset.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to swallow, isn't it?
It's very hard to swallow. So.
Okay. East of the Rockies, good morning. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello.
Hello. I can barely hear you, dear, so you're going to have to yell at us.
Okay. Hi, Art. Good morning, Art. Good morning, Major Dames. This
good
is
morning.
Michelle in Chicago, and I had a quick question, actually, too, if I could, but... the question I was really wondering about is, during or maybe before or after the kill shot, event, are there going to be like, you know, people describe sacred cities forming or people coming together, during
after a series of these kill shots, these solar flares, there's going to be a Mad Max scenario first for quite a while.
All right, during that last break, it snapped back. Ed, you weren't messing with McClock, were you?
Negative. We just did that once. That's all we needed to do.
Yeah, well, some mess with the clock once, mess with the clock twice, from my point of view. All right, East of the Rockies, you're back on, and you were asking about something near and fear to my heart, the kill shot.
Yeah.
I want to know, too. Ed, many of my friends, many of acquaintances have heard about the kill shot, and it scares the hell out of them. Is it still on?
It's on more than ever. Look at the recent announcements by NOAA. Solar physicists realize that the sun is acting in a way that is totally unpredictable, in a way that they could have never predicted or even described. And it just, all you have to do is monitor the news, and you see that they're extremely concerned. And the most recent announcement 2 weeks ago was, expect the worst. They don't know what the worst is.
I have been seeing those stories, Ed.
Yeah, the story is that the likelihood that a single event latch up, that satellites will be put out of commission and the grids will go down, are much higher than they've ever expected based upon studying the interior of the sun. And they do not know what is going on. This is supposed to be a solar minimum.
Okay.
That's the power of remote viewing.
Caller, does that answer your question?
Yeah, actually I had a second part question, a very quick part of it that kind of relates very well. I suppose it's something that stood out in my mind a lot. That Ed was speaking about a couple of years back, it was about, in regard to the kill shot, where, I don't know if it was a remote viewing description, but it just really stands out in my mind, but it's just, it was a description of looking up in the sky, and something happens, I guess there's a lot of fighting.
Three warring parties, remote viewers have described, three warring parties on the ground fighting, and then all of a sudden everybody looks up in the sky and sees a physical thing. This is not an allegorical picture. They see something physical in the sky, and it's so impactful that they forget about the fighting and go home to their families.
Hmm.
Their priorities change by something in the sky, physically in the sky, in the atmosphere.
And you still stand by that occurring?
Oh, yes. What I think is happening is what, and this is my best guess about what that is that there is an effect because of a solar storm, because of an very extreme X-ray activity, very extreme proton flares, that something happens in Earth's atmosphere that is unprecedented, that we've never seen before. And it would be the equivalent of combining for the first time, let's say, two elements or two gases and then creating a whole new state of matter that nobody's ever seen before. It's something like that. The physics don't exist to describe what they will see in the air, because we haven't seen, remote viewers can't describe it. It's something like a mass or a flowing mass in the atmosphere, but it's really spooky and scary.
Yeah, well, maybe you're getting closer to the spiritual world by the minute. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mr. Spiritual.
Hello, my name is Kurt. I'm from Phoenix. I've listened to him on the air for all the 9 years he's been on, and to this day you have not come up with one darn thing that has been predicted or whatever that I remember, anything of value, maybe a frog in a pond or a bird in a tree maybe, but
no, that's,
I just
that's
think
not,
he's
wait a minute, hold on,
wash.
Hold on, that's not fair. He did predict troubles, big troubles,
well,
with
what
frogs.
About 9/11? I mean, you got these people up on the air, and 9/11, all these people dying in two buildings, and this man could not figure that out because he has all this capability.
Okay,
what's up with these people
okay,
on the
well,
air?
Okay, let him answer.
The
hold
they
it.
Can't do a damn
hold it. Let him answer.
Okay,
Ed.
Two things. As an example, let's
oh, you got a target. You got to target an airplane. You got to target two buildings in New York, and then you're up on the air saying you got all this. Okay, now that you can pinpoint things, tomorrow I expect to know where Biden is.
Where who is, caller?
Huh?
You said you expect to know where who is?
Bin Laden, tomorrow. Okay. Obviously, he can pinpoint things. He can pinpoint things now. Okay, tomorrow he should call the authorities and say, okay, Bin Laden is here, and then they'll go get him.
Okay, well, I don't disagree with that at all, Ed.
Well, what do I do with this child murderer? Leave him on the streets? You want to kill again?
No, but...
Well, the caller...
The caller is right. I mean, if you called the government, someone in the government said, Osama bin Laden is here, and you hit it, that'd be a good one.
How do they know that I'm going to hit it? The last time I have a direct line to MacDill Air Force Base, to Special Operations Command, 48 hours after 9/11, we delivered extremely detailed maps of the command post where that particular attack was planned. I wanted to know who funded, who paid for that attack, and where the command post was.
Right.
Special Forces was in that underground bunker complex 2 weeks later, because that's how long it took him to get there. Osama bin Laden had already left. But that's an example of the work that we do for the
government. And to be fair, look, remote viewers are not like psychics. They don't just have things arbitrarily come to them. And so, yes, you do have to target, which is what Ed started to say, you do have to target something specific, like an airplane or an act, or somebody would have something to do with what was about to happen. It's not a psychic kind of epiphany thing that Ed does. Is that fair, Ed?
You have to tune your mental radio to a specific station. You have to know the next catastrophe or next catastrophic terrorist attack with massive loss of life, let's say in Indonesia or something like that. You have to actually focus on a specific area or topic, pattern of information, and then pull that out. We're not psychics that stick our antenna up in the air and receive a zillion different radio signals at once and pick
them up. But a lot of people confuse you with psychics.
I understand.
They just do, and that obviously was one who did. First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
This is Jeff from Southern Illinois.
Yes, sir.
I've seen remote viewing on Discovery Channel.
Yes.
Years past. They found such things as special operatives undercover, taken hostage a continent away.
Oh, there's no question about it. I know.
Targeted specific buildings they were in. I've never heard this guest on the program before. I was just wondering something maybe in U.S. News and World Report, Time Magazine, something that he's predicted that I could recognize.
Okay. Your greatest success, Ed?
Mine or the units or
either one.
There's a number of operations in the unit that will never be made public because it gives away operatives. But I think let me give you one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite, and it's attributable really to Mel Riley and to Joe McMonagle. We could not figure out how a certain KGB agent, we knew he was KGB, but we needed the goods on this guy operating out of a certain country's embassy, how he was communicating with Moscow. We couldn't figure it out. Nobody, the CIA couldn't do it. So they gave the task to the remote viewing unit, to the Psi spy unit.
Right.
Mel Riley and Joe McMonagle pinpointed a calculator, sketched a calculator. Now, they knew nothing about this agent. They were given this target blind. They both described a calculator that was being used to communicate to Moscow. Long story short, there was a radio hidden in this calculator, and that's how the codes were being transmitted
to Moscow. All right. Now, we can't, of course, confirm that. What about your personal, I don't know if predictions are the right word.
I think one of my favorite is, and this was only two remote viewing sessions by myself, not my team, and that was Egypt Air Flight 990 when I said that there was an altercation in the cabin. There was actually fisticuffs going on in the cabin, and that's what brought that plane down.
I recall.
And everybody laughed at me, and even you said, Ed, you're sticking your neck out.
Yeah, I remember.
But I said, when that voice recorder is found at the bottom of the ocean,
that's what it'll be.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, I remember. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hi, Art. God bless you. Major Dames, I have a question. It's not so much about politics, but more about science, because whenever we find, for example, something like another creature other than our own species able to communicate in a sophisticated way, this is a thing of interest, and it adds to our understanding of the diversity and beauty, and as well as just our understanding about the universe. And when I was 15, I discovered a kind of communication in yellow jackets in which one of them knows where the nest is, but the other ones don't, because the nest has been illuminated at night by artificial light, or it's been moved by the experimenter or something like this, and they're all searching for it, and then one finds it, and then she needs to tell the other ones where it is. And the method that they use, there are two possible interpretations of what I saw, and there's an ambiguity between the two, And I want to see if you have the insight, either with or without remote viewing, to figure out which of these two possibilities is the real one. I can't find out because this species is almost extinct. It's been replaced
now,
by a European one that's been introduced here.
You're talking about the actual transmission of information that modality?
Yes.
Or perhaps several modalities.
Well, I'll tell you what actually happens. It's a visual modality, but the way it works.
Oh, excuse me, sir.
Yes.
You think it's a visual modality, but you really don't know, do you?
Well, let me tell you what I was able to ascertain.
Okay.
That's invariant in both interpretations. Then I'll tell you the difference briefly.
All right, we're doing a lot of time, so go ahead.
Yeah, I'll try to be very concise. So then I'll tell you the difference between the two interpretations and see if you can tell me.
Just go ahead and do it, sir.
Okay. If, let's say, I wanted to show you where something is, but I couldn't point because I was in an airplane. I'm a pilot, and I want to show you as another pilot where the missing airport is. I could fly in a circle around it and take you in tow. And then you could look at the part of your screen that isn't blurring, that isn't moving, and that would be the center of the circle that I'm circling. So if I intentionally circle the target, I've shown you where the target is, and I don't have to take you in tow for very long to show you that. And then having shown you, I am then free to show someone else, and so are you, because we now both have the information. Now, in the case of these yellow jackets, they're not clever enough when they see one taking another one in tow to know where it was. They actually have to be taken in tow to get the information. And they probably do it by looking at the part of their screen that isn't moving at the moment. They don't actually go in a circle, but a figure eight on the surface of a sphere, which does the same thing for three-dimensional environments.
All right.
Now, the question is, two of them are only being informed at a time while the other ones are waiting their turn. And the question is, does one yellow jacket take all the other ones in tow, each in turn, to show them where the nest is, or does one show the other one, then go into the nest, and then let the
All right, we get it. Ed, how would you answer that?
I would set the problem. We take the question, the problem set, and what we do is remote viewers and students know this. We have to engineer a queue, a matrix search term, just like you would engineer an internet database search. So we take that problem set and we turn that into a search term that collective unconscious can recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a several different search terms. And we turn this into a problem set and we research how that particular communication is being affected. But it's important that the caller realize that we do not use preconceived notions. In this case, he was talking about visuals because, after all, it's an unknown. We're solving for an unknown. So we go into a problem set like this clean. We want to first recreate how one insect is communicating with one or more, and we do, and it may or may not be visuals, or it may be a complex of things. So that's what we have to do first. And then by doing that, we produce what's called a site template or an idea template. And this is a sketch, a schematic diagram of all the essential elements of information in the problem and in the solution. And the next step is analysis. We have to be able to identify each one of those things in the diagram and know what's going on. I'll give you another example too. Let's say that we want to know how telepathy works, or let's say healing. Suppose there's a healer who heals a bunch of people in a room. Well, a remote viewer might be interested in the mechanics and the dynamics of how that process happened. The healer, his or herself, may not understand how they're doing it.
Or even care.
Right. But we can model what is going on, and by the time we get to this template, this diagram of all the things that are going on during that particular event, we're looking for things we don't recognize. And we've sketched the people in the room, we've sketched the so-called healer, we've sketched the room itself and all that, but we're looking for diagrams that we that are unknowns.
Right.
And that's what we research. What are these?
All right. Got it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Oh, hi. It beeped when you said east of the Rockies. My question real quick was, assuming that remote viewing is actually real, and I'm not saying it is or not, is there the possibility, or has it been used for evil, such as stalking other people and that sort of thing?
That's a good question, actually.
Well, let's see. I tried to kill Muammar Gaddafi, my military team, and I think some people would call that evil. We were trying our best to kill him. In fact, we got
I mean, just, you know, the general
Joe Blow population, say you got someone that's interested in a girl or a guy.
I don't know. I don't teach ethics. I teach remote viewing. And now I'm helping out on a movie called The ESP Affair. And I just did the entire trailer. And that actually has that theme where a rogue member, a former member of a military team, is kicked off the team, and he uses his remote viewing power and his remote influence power to attempt to seduce a civilian female.
Scary thought.
But can it be done?
I'm curious why you're asking, caller. Do you feel so affected?
No. It was just a question, because in this age of Big Brother is watching you and microchips and everything, I got to thinking, well, if you can just go and remote view a target, who's to say that target could not be a person?
Of course it
could. And who's to say that?
You have no business viewing.
And who's to say there could not be remote influence, a more serious matter to consider, indeed.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much for the call.
It's a brave new world.
West of the Rockies, you might be the last caller for Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Mike calling from Auburn, Washington. Hello, Major Dames.
Hi.
Yes, I had a question for you. You had mentioned last summer on this program that you had remote viewed some type of new humanoids that were some kind of hybrids of humans that were probably being experimented with by a lot of these abductions, that kind of thing, and that they would show up after the kill shot to help with the reconstruction of this planet?
No, that's not what I said. I said that after this Mad Max scenario that succeeds that the kill shots, there would be another race that actually lands, and they do look like us, but I did not connect them with any dots that dealt with hybrids or things like that. I said perhaps. I said what I think these are. I didn't say hybrids. I said that they looked like they were raised off planet. Might assume they're hybrids, but these look like humans that were actually raised somewhere else and are used to facilitate repair, damage, reconstruction on our planet after the Mad Max scenario is over.
And would they be coexisting with us humans while they're doing this?
No, not now, but later, yes, they'll be here with us.
Will we actually be, interbreeding and marrying with these?
All right, that'll have to hold it right there.
Don't know. Haven't gone that far.
No interbreeding and marriage.
We have not gone that far.
Okay.
To look that far.
All right. It's been a fascinating night, as always, Ed, and we will have you back. Perhaps you'll be the guest in Ukraine, and I'll be the host in Manila.
No, perhaps about it. That's what we'll do.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, we'll do it. And I wish you and your bride all good things. I'm very happy for you.
Right back at you, buddy. Take care.